Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, January 24, 2022. Families of a Sudanese activist picked by security forces over the weekend are calling for her release.
Amira is a person of special needs. She needs special care, including her bed and her toilet as well. She is unable to use the toilet as an ordinary person. She is still under treatment and she needs to take the drugs daily.
And armed men attacked senior members of the Anglican Church in Jonglei State over the weekend.
They came here and they attacked those who were sleeping out there. They fired at them. When they ran away, they got one person.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some Sudanese activists have condemned the detention of Amira Osman, the head of a non-profit No to Women Oppression initiative. Amira was reportedly picked by security forces over the weekend. Some activists say the arrest of Amira violates her rights to free speech. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Human rights activist Amira Osman was detained on Saturday night by a group of Sudanese armed men who reportedly took her to an unknown location. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Amani Osman, the sister to Amira, confirmed her sister was arrested by a group of Sudanese armed security operatives who allegedly terrorized the family during the incident. Amani says her family were told Amira is detained at Omdurman prison for women. She says none of the family members have been allowed to visit her.
Amira is a person of special needs. She needs special care, including her bed and her toilet as well. She is unable to use the toilet as an ordinary person. She is still under treatment and she needs to take the drugs daily. She is very active in the resistance committee, and I think she has been arrested due to her activities in the resistance.
Amira, who heads the Sudanese women advocacy group No to Women Oppression Initiative, has been vocal in advocating for women participation in Sudan during the rule of the ousted President Omar al-Bashir. The initiative had played a significant role in fighting laws and regulations that restricted the rights of women in Sudan, including the Public Order Act. Amani says the arrest of her sister is a clear violation of human rights. She says the actions of security forces shows brutality of the Sudanese military.
What happened to Amira can happen to any Sudanese citizen or home. Security keeps on breaking into houses, shops, and looting property. You can't imagine the terror and fear we are living in now after the arrest of Amira.
Ehsan Abdallah is an executive member of the No to Women Oppression Initiative. She condemned the arrest of her leader and urged the authorities in Sudan to grant Amira her right to medical attention and a lawyer. Abdallah says Amira's detention is illegal and the military leaders should release her or charge her in the court of law.
We will organize a peaceful protest and write a statement on this incident. We will address all the security organs and human rights institutions. We will also organize a press conference to shed light on the violation of rights of Amira as a human and a woman.
Abdallah says activists will continue to demonstrate against the military rule until a civilian-led government is established in Sudan.
The right to peaceful protest and expression is a constitutional right of all nations. I think we are under a new dictatorship once again because they suspended the constitution and the democracy in the country. They have been using all types of excessive force against the protesters, including live bullets.
Pro-democracy protesters rejected the October 25th military takeover and continued with their demand for a civilian rule. The Central Committee for Sudanese Doctors say more than 70 pro-democracy protesters have been killed since October 25th military coup, prompting reactions from judges who petitioned the military over excessive use of force on protesters. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The Episcopal Church of Sudan says three of its bishops, including the new Archbishop of the Jonglei Internal Province, Moses An-Nur, survived an ambush in Bor over the weekend. Justin Bade Arama, the primate of the Episcopal Church in South Sudan, condemns the incident and blames some young men and some unnamed senior politicians from Jonglei behind the attacks. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Zakaria Manyok, the bishop of Wangulei Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says a group of armed assailants who are believed to be the supporters of the deprocked Archbishop Ruben Akurdit entered the Langbar B church premises and started shooting in the rooms at around 3:10 a.m. on Saturday.
They came here and they attacked those who were sleeping out there. They fired at them. When they ran away, they got one person. They started beating that person. So I opened the door. I tried to go out, and those of Tuch and Anur said, no, you cannot go out. And they were aware that we were here. So they were told, Zakaria is in this room, Anur is in this room, Tuch is in this room, and we have four rooms in this house. So they came. They started to force their way through the door, and they could not. And so they came to the door of Moses An-Nur, Archbishop Moses An-Nur, and they fired inside using PKM. And after that, they came to my window. They fired, and the bullets entered, like you could see from my mosquito net, and they entered and hit the wall. And explode. When they exploded, some debris came back and cut my upper lip, and so I was bleeding here.
Bishop Manyok, who was injured on his upper lip, says he, Bishop Gabriel Thunyagoth of Kongor Diocese, and Archbishop Moses An-Nur were sleeping in separate rooms but the same building when they were sprayed with PKM bullets. He says two other people were also injured.
The names are known. The names of these people are known. There were four from Koch. There were more than three from Dare, and the rest. Then there were people also who came from Chweker. Then these people who attacked us were police people. One of them is a regimental sergeant major in the police. Another one is a bodyguard of a general of police. So we know them. One of them is from CID. We know all of them. And they attacked us. Some of them were wearing their uniform and others were not.
Major General Joseph Mayana Akon, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, confirms the incident and said nobody was arrested and the police have launched investigations into the incident. In a letter dated 22nd of January 2022, Tuong Majuk, the Jonglei State Acting Governor, enforces curfew and ordered for the closure of some ECS churches in Bor Town, including the St. Andrew's Cathedral, where Akudit is operating, and Langbar B Church, where Moses An-Nur operates. Justin Badi Arama, the primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, condemns the incident and blames the violent behavior of the young men against the clergy on some unnamed senior politicians from Jonglei State.
This is the third time for such incident to happen in the church premises in Bor. Early last year, 2021, two youth members were shot by the police in the same church compound, and no one was brought to book of justice. Afterwards, in the same year, two bishops were stopped at Bor airstrip, humiliated and deported back to Juba by the government of Jonglei State.
The standoff between Bishop Akurdit and ECS Primate Justin Badiarama began in August 2020 when Badiarama fired Akurdit from his post as Archbishop of Jonglei Internal Province and the Bishop of Diocese Bor after he established the three additional dioceses of Makwach, Anyidi, and Kolnyang within the Jonglei Internal Province without consulting other church officials. Arama appointed Bishop Moses Anu to replace Akurdit, who was expected to retire due to his age. But Akurdit filed a case in Juba's High Court challenging his dismissal. The court dismissed the case and referred it to a church tribunal for settlement. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
Heavy gunfire erupted inside a Burkina Faso military base early Sunday, sparking fears a coup was underway in the West African country. Reporter Henry Wilkins managed to enter the base where a mutiny was taking place after being detained by soldiers. They later released him with a list of demands. He has this report.
Arriving at Ouagadougou's largest military base, Camp Sangoulé-Lamizana, the sound of sporadic gunfire could be heard coming from inside. As we tried to approach, mutinous soldiers, their faces covered with bandanas, fired shots in the air and shouted at us to leave. I was with a journalist from the Associated Press. We rode to a nearby highway which runs the length of the base to try to get some elevated shots. Soldiers outside the walls of the camp spotted us, and we drove away quickly, but were soon stopped by troops who walked out into the road and fired shots in the air before training their guns on us. We threw our hands up. Shouting in French, the soldiers took our bags, cameras, and our motorcycle and walked us along the wall of the camp to a highway intersection where a crowd of about 100 people, some waving Burkinabe flags, had gathered. Shortly after that, around 20 soldiers fired into the air and shouted at the crowd to move back. While some soldiers were shouting at us, others told us it was going to be okay, and they didn't intend to harm us. I began to wonder if we were being taken hostage. At the entrance to the base, soldiers blockaded the gates with armoured vehicles. They took us inside and reunited us with our camera equipment and motorcycle. After around 15 minutes, they told us we were free to go. But not before they called one of the organisers of the mutiny on a phone to give us their list of demands. This is a recording of what was said. The speaker said we want enough troops to assist us in the fight against terrorism, more money and more troops. The soldiers also said they wanted the chief of the intelligence service and the military chief of staff to be replaced. They asked for better care of the wounded and family of soldiers who have died in the conflict, better training which is adapted to terror threats, and the organisation of a permanent military unit on the front lines, not one that changes with rotations. The demands were given by a captain who declined to be named. Burkina Faso has been embroiled in a conflict with terror groups linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State since 2015. Rumours of a coup have been rife for weeks after a military base in the north of the country was overrun by terrorists, killing 49 military members. President Roch Kabore fired members of his cabinet and military leadership in December in response. On January 11th, the authorities announced they had arrested members of the military who were planning to destabilise the institutions of the Republic, causing many analysts to speculate a coup plot had been foiled. Speaking on national television Sunday morning, the Burkinabe Defence Minister, Emi Bartholomé Simpaoré, stated that the president had not been detained as rumoured. He also said the motive behind the gunfire was still not clear. Inside the base, however, it was clear the mutinies had taken over the camp entirely and did not intend to relinquish control until their demands were met. By the time we left the base, mobile internet network had been cut and information about further developments related to the mutiny was scarce. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, authorities in Cameroon investigate weekend's nightclub blast. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. question today.
When you are upset, would you rather be alone or with others?
I'd rather be alone, because sometimes being with people demands a lot from someone's self.
When you stress up, there's no need of being alone, because when you are with others, at least they can advise you.
When I'm upset, actually, being alone is not a good thing. So at least I have to associate with my colleague and I end up releasing that anger from me.
I prefer being alone when I'm upset, yeah. Because at least when I'm alone, I regain some humor that I, when at least I go in public, I can talk with someone now. But when I'm still pissed, I can't talk to anyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The head of the U.S. Africa Command says security threats are growing across the continent. In his first on-camera interview since taking command 2 years ago, General Stephen Townsend spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bapp about these increasing concerns, including the spread of violent extremist groups, the role of Russian mercenaries, military inroads by China, and threats from Iran.
The U.S. military has now confirmed reports that Russian mercenaries known as the Wagner Group are in Mali. General Stephen Townsend, the commander of U.S. Africa Command, told VOA Thursday that Mali's junta brought in hundreds of foreign fighters to protect their regime.
Wagner is in Mali. They are there, we think, in numbering several hundred now. They're deploying there, supported by the Russian military, Russian Air Force airplanes are delivering them. The world can see this happening. So it's a great concern to us. And the reason it concerns me and it concerns the neighbors there is we have watched Wagner, this mercenary outfit, work on the African continent. We've watched them in the Central African Republic, Sudan, Libya. They don't follow anybody's rules but their own. They will exploit the country. They will break laws. They will do gross violations of human rights. They will kill innocents and civilians. And then when the Malian people get tired of them, they won't leave.
Townsend, who took over U.S. Africa Command in 2019, also told VOA the most active global competitor in Africa is not Russia, but China. Beijing, he says, is following billions of dollars of economic investments on the continent with creeping, steady, and strategic military investments. In 2017, China's military opened up a base in Djibouti, just a few kilometers away from Camp Lemonnier, the United States' only military base in Africa. The general said Beijing now looks to Africa's western coast, intent on building a military airbase or naval facility in Equatorial Guinea.
They're putting chips down in all these countries on the Atlantic coast. They know that they won't get a yes in many cases from many of those countries. But by asking and trying to get a base in all these countries, one or two of them may say yes. And we think that the place that they've got traction right now is Equatorial Guinea. We're not asking them to choose between China and us. What we're asking them to do is consider their other international partners and their concerns, because a Chinese military base in Equatorial Guinea is of great concern to the U.S. and all of their other partners.
In addition to Chinese military expansion, Townsend said he's monitoring a less obvious threat to U.S. interest on the continent, the one from Iran.
We are starting to see them express increasing interest in Africa and starting to make some inroads there. I think their inroads are going to be malign in nature. And so we're just keeping an eye on it. It's very nascent, but it's happening now, and we're watching it.
Can you give us any examples? Can you get into a couple of examples of that?
I'll just say that they're intelligence-related, and the arm of the Iranian security apparatus that engages in malign activity in the Middle East is the same arm that's now engaged on the African continent.
A U.S. official confirmed to VOA that after a U.S. drone strike killed Iran's elite Quds Force leader Qasem Soleimani, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps plotted assassination attempts on American diplomats in Africa and is still looking for revenge targets there. Iran has dismissed the accusations as baseless. Due to concerns over increased threats, officials say in the past year, the U.S. military has brought in new and improved defense systems and anti-drone weapons to Camp Lemonnier. The Pentagon has just completed a global posture review of U.S. forces and military resources around the world, a review that Townsend says, quote, ratified AFRICOM's current posture. The command did, however, lose some funding for military exercises with African partners. And for the last year, Townsend says he has shuttled troops in and out of Somalia. Donald Trump ordered most of the 800 U.S. troops out of the war-torn country in 2020 in one of his last foreign policy moves as American president.
They are in bases in the region, and we commute to work. And so who's in Somalia every day is less than 100.
How's that affecting the mission?
We are working hard to get our tasks done. I think that there's more effective and efficient ways to do that. We provided those recommendations to the Secretary of Defense, and we're waiting for decisions there.
But as Townsend awaits decisions from the Pentagon, political infighting continues in Mogadishu, where al-Qaeda affiliate al-Shabaab is adding to its ranks.
The threat of al-Shabaab is growing, and if increased pressure is not applied to al-Shabaab, I'm concerned that there's going to be a significant al-Shabaab attack. We've seen just suicide bombs going off in Mogadishu over the last 2 weeks. So I think they're expanding and they're a growing threat.
The January 12th attack on the Somali capital killed at least 8 people. Carla Babb, VOA News.
Cameroon say it has opened an investigation to find out the names and nationalities of the 17 people who died Sunday in a fire that caused an explosion in the capital Yaoundé. The blast in a popular nightclub wounded 8 people. The government is calling for calm as thousands of football fans visit Yaoundé for the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations football tournament. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of people, including Cameroonian government officials, turned out in Bastos, a Yaoundé neighborhood, on Sunday morning. They watched as neighbors and workers of Leaves, a popular nightclub, and Cameroon's military fire brigade searched 3 torched buildings in the area. Among the civilians helping to search for the injured was 27-year-old Gustave Lamelo.
C'est difficile de savoir qui est qui puisque on ne donne pas les cartes nationales.
Lamelo says civilians and the fire brigade of Cameroon's military have saved the lives of at least 40 people. He says it is difficult to know the names and nationalities of the injured and the dead, because clients do not present identification documents before having access to Leaves. Lamale said he is certain that the victims include people visiting Cameroon for the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations. In a statement, the government says an accidental fire at the nightclub spread to a cooking gas store. There were loud explosions from 6 gas canisters, causing panic in the neighborhood. Public Health Minister Manauda Malashi says President Paul Biya was informed of the incident as soon as it occurred. Manauda says Biya has instructed health workers to transport the wounded to Yaoundé Central Hospital.
Le président de la République a instruit que leur prise en charge soit totale et gratuite.
He says Biya has asked the public health ministry to treat the wounded free of charge and that arrangements be made for the dead to be buried in their places of origin after the investigation. He says Biya has instructed his ministry to give psychological assistance to traumatized family members of the injured whenever the traumatized relatives are identified. René Emmanuel Sadi, Cameroon's Minister of Communication, visited the site of the incident. He says it is too early to know the names and countries of origin of the dead and wounded.
We are still at the level of inquiry. The incident is quite serious. There's been people who are dead, others are injured, and investigations are going on. I think when all these things are finished, I will be given the exact information concerning this very serious incident.
Sadi said the death toll may increase. President Biya has called for calm and assured football players, fans and match officials attending the Africa Cup of Nations in Yaoundé of their safety. Cameroon is hosting thousands of people for the tournament, which started on January 9th and will end on February 6th. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The United Nations Refugee Agency says thousands of Eritrean refugees in Ethiopia's embattled northern Tigray province are living under life-threatening conditions because they have no access to humanitarian help. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN refugee staff members say they were shocked by what they saw when they visited the Mai Aini and Adi Harush camps for Eritrean refugees in southern Tigray for the first time in 3 weeks. Intense fighting and security concerns have prevented them from going there until now. Boris Cheshikov, a spokesman for UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, says the team found refugees scared and struggling to get enough to eat. He says they lacked medicine and had little or no access to clean water.
Refugees told UNHCR of increasing preventable deaths, more than 20 over the last 6 weeks, linked to the overall decline in conditions and, in particular, the lack of medicine and health services. The clinics in the camps have been essentially closed since early January, when they finally completely ran out of medicine.
Conditions in Tigray have seriously deteriorated since the Ethiopian military incursion into the province in November 2020. The civil conflict since has spread to other regions in northern Ethiopia. An effective blockade has prevented humanitarian aid, including fuel, from reaching the area since mid-December. Cheshikov says extreme hunger is rising because supplies cannot be moved into the region. He says food is running out in the two camps, and refugees have been selling their clothes and few belongings to get food.
If food, medicine, fuel, and other supplies cannot be immediately brought in, and if we continue to be unable to relocate refugees out of harm's way to where we can provide them with life-saving assistance, more refugees will die.
The UNHCR says it wants to relocate the more than 25,000 Eritrean refugees remaining in the two camps to a new site provided by the Ethiopian government in the neighboring Amhara region. The agency is calling on all parties for a ceasefire and guarantees of safe passage to allow the operation to go ahead. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now end this show with General Paulino with the song Shikilmanga.
Good morning to you.
We've been listening to General Paulino and the song Shikilmanga. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
المسود أصفر أخضر مانجا سيد سوداني تل إيسي موار نفسدو مانجا إتزاتو فريدا هي بين بان